Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good. Hey, friend, I am so excited for today's episode. It's an Ask Me Anything episode, and I've collected some great questions from listeners just like you, as well as from past clients. I can't wait to dive in today. There's one thing you should know. You can ask me anything, anytime. Take a moment to join the nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where you can ask your questions about all things learning and development. Not only will you get access to my opinion, but you'll also have your peers from other nonprofits in the group to weigh in. Curious how other nonprofits are conducting needs assessments? Ask. Not sure how to prioritize well-being in your organizational culture? Ask. Struggling to pick an LMS? Ask. We are here for you inside the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective. If you've been listening the past couple weeks, we are in party mode here at Learning for Good. This is episode 49 of the podcast, and I am so close to episode 50. This week is a rapid fire Ask Me Anything episode, and next week, the big 5-0 is a behind the scenes look at Skill Masters Market. We are a premier training and leadership development firm focused specifically on nonprofits. We've been trusted by some of the largest nonprofits in the country, and we love each client and each project we get to take on. I can't wait to dive into that episode. But for today, it's Ask Me Anything. I posted on LinkedIn a few weeks ago asking for questions, and I also sorted through past questions from clients. I'm going to go quick in today's episode, so take some notes or save this one for later if there's anything you want to revisit. Speaking of notes, you could be entered to win a Skill Masters Market Rocket Book. It's a reusable notebook where you can take notes, upload them to the cloud, erase, and repeat. All you have to do is leave me a podcast review. Reviews mean a lot to me because they help me reach more people just like you. And they help me know which content resonates with you most so you get more content you like. Any reviews left before or between episode 47 and episode 50 next week will be entered to win. All right. Let's let the celebration continue with episode 49 of Learning for Good, Ask Me Anything. So my first question came from a past client, but a similar question was also asked on LinkedIn. So a lot of times I'm working with clients to create custom competency models to really identify what skills staff are going to need to be successful within the organization. And once you have that model, it becomes a foundational resource that can be used in all of your talent practices, from hiring, staff development, career pathing, performance evaluations. It can be used throughout the talent lifecycle. So I often get asked, how do we use this in our learning strategy? How do we know what training to prioritize based on the competency model? Or how can we create a comprehensive training program based on the competency model? And so that's what I want to talk about first. So once you have your competency model in place, it has identified the skills that are needed for staff across the organization. And then it defines what that skill looks like at each particular level in the organization. So let's say communication is an easy example. Communication at the support staff level will look very different than communication at the person who's leading the organization, your C-suite, your VPs. That communication is going to look a little bit different because they are often interacting and communicating with community partners or with people in the policy and advocacy space, right? Their communication looks different. They also are communicating internally differently because they're often setting a vision for the organization. They're influencing organizational culture. they're taking organizational strategies and deciphering or translating that for teams across the organization. So the communication just looks different. The support staff might also be communicating externally or internally, but they're probably going to be focused more on making sure their communication is really clear, making sure that they're being clear about deadlines or what their request is, all kinds of different things in that communication realm, but it looks different than the C-suite. So once you have those competencies identified, you can do a couple of different things to prioritize training. The first is you can look and see, okay, I think we need to do communication training for the support staff. We've had some things come up where we see this as a need, it's been vetted as a need, and we think communication is going to be something that we need to focus on. So then you can go to those behavioral indicators, those specific behavior descriptions, and say, here are the things that we said people at the support level need to be able to do when it comes to communication. And so you can create your training based on those behavioral indicators so that you know you're training people to act in the way that you've identified will be important in your organization. So that's one thing, looking at the competency model, looking at the behavioral indicators for that level and saying, we're going to develop training specifically to enhance this particular skill set. Another way you can do it is you can map those competencies and say, which ones are priority competencies across the organization? And as you look at that, you might say, okay, these types of functions, these teams really are focused on collaboration. They're doing a lot of work in that way. And so as I look across the organization, collaboration is important for everybody, but it really is a theme, a priority, and in a high level across so many of our teams. That's something we want to focus on as an organization and get better at as an organization. Well, now you know that collaboration can become an opportunity for a comprehensive training program or a priority within your training space. So that's another way to look at it, is which competencies are really important, the most important, rising to the top across many, many different functions within your organization. So that's another way. There are other ways to do this as well, but just wanted to give you a couple of ideas there for how you use the competency model to prioritize training or create comprehensive training programs. All right. So my next question comes from Kirsten. This one's also on LinkedIn. How can a small organization get started with learning and development? And where's the best place to begin? So I would actually recommend small organizations. A lot of times, the smaller the organization, the less likely they are to create custom training, in the sense of someone is creating it for you and then you're delivering it over and over again within your organization. And so I would recommend a couple of things for the smaller organizations. First is, it's still important to know what skills are valuable to your nonprofit. And so I do think that there is a benefit to creating a custom competency model, even when you're a smaller organization, because you're identifying what skills are needed to be successful, no matter where a person sits in the organization, and you're defining what that looks like. And again, that impacts hiring practices, how you onboard staff, developing staff over time, career pathing. If you have multiple staff, you can still do career pathing in your organization. And career pathing can also be pathing out of the organization. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Performance evaluations, goal setting, all of those different things. So competency models are a great place to start. Then what I would recommend is doing some sort of self-assessment for staff. This can be informal, where they're reflecting and thinking about what their strengths are, what skills they want to leverage over time. This can be formal with a 360 assessment or independent assessment that is hosted by a vendor, and much more formal in how it gathers information and then how it presents that data back to the individual. But what that does, it allows the individual to see what skills they need to focus on or want to focus on moving forward. And then for the smaller organization, I would recommend looking outside of your organization. So instead of bringing in custom training, I would look outside and say, okay, we did this assessment process and we know that we really want to build influence skills in some of our staff identified that. And so we're going to go out into the world and we're going to see what kind of training we can find on influence and see if there's something that we can purchase and allow our staff learners to go through and complete on their own. So that's an option there. All right. The next question comes also from LinkedIn, from Dr. J. What are the greatest challenges for contemporary trainers, especially in turbulent times? So two particular challenges came to mind as I was thinking about this question. The first is the amount of change that's happening in the world and in the organizations, and the amount of change fatigue that most staff learners are experiencing. So when I think about this, it becomes really important as a facilitator to recognize that your learners are experiencing a lot of change. There's a lot of uncertainty, even in the workplace, and that change fatigue impacts the way they show up to your training. And so if you are a trainer, being able to facilitate well, being able to build that trust is going to be really, really important. The other thing that comes to mind is the amount of divisiveness that we're seeing in the world today. I think that, again, this goes back to just really strong facilitation, knowing that conversations that you bring up in the training space, people aren't going to agree, and they're not necessarily going to politely disagree or ignore the fact that they don't agree. People are going to speak up. And so being able to facilitate conversations, even when people don't agree, is going to be really important. All right. So my next question comes from a client. How can we make a large cohort of learners feel more intimate? So if you are doing any kind of synchronous training, relationships are a huge benefit of bringing people together in a space, whether virtual or in person. And so when you have a large cohort of learners, it can be difficult to make that space feel more intimate where those relationships are able to be built. So in this case, I recommend one, using smaller groups throughout the training so that they are getting to know each other and working together in those smaller groups where relationships can be formed. I also recommend taking things offline, so to speak. And so if it's a virtual training or even an in-person training, what can you do to include some social learning, some peer learning, so that they're learning from each other? Again, it can be one-on-one, it can be small groups, it can be online discussion boards. But how are you bringing people into community and facilitating that in a way that it does feel more intimate?
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective.
Okay, so we are about halfway through with the questions for Ask Me Anything. But remember, if these questions are sparking anything for you, you can always go to the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective and post questions there, and you'll be able to get feedback from me and from others, your peers across different nonprofits. So if anything comes to mind, feel free to head over there. So this question comes from George, also on LinkedIn. So what role does ongoing competency assessment play in ensuring staff are equipped with the necessary skills to succeed? So I've talked about competency assessments some in the past. I have some past episodes on that. We can drop those in the show notes. Competency assessment is great because it gives you a few different benefits. The first is that you can use it as a before and after. So an individual can take a competency assessment, they can go through a training or set of trainings, and then they can take another assessment after. That allows them to see for themselves any growth they've had. Another thing that a competency assessment allows you to do is it allows you or allows your staff to create an individual development plan based on the assessment results. So they complete the competency assessment, and then they're able to tailor what they want to focus on in their individual development plan. And so that helps them make sure that they're developing the right skills that they feel they need moving forward. Another piece of this could be personalized learning. So you can use a competency assessment and even that individual development plan to allow the staff person to really personalize their learning experience. So whether that's taking the assessment and then going through a kind of standard learning experience, but they're going through that standard learning experience with their particular goals in mind, that makes it a little bit more personalized, a little bit more tailored to them. That's a great way to use competency assessments to create personalized learning. And then the last thing I would say is coaching. So you can do an ongoing, you can do a competency assessment and then provide ongoing coaching so that staff are being equipped with the necessary skills to succeed. That ongoing coaching is a great way to help fill in the learning so that whatever they're picking up, either in formal or informal ways, they're able to really apply that to the job. So ongoing competency assessment definitely plays a role in equipping staff with the necessary skills to succeed. And it's often best paired with either a before and after or a training, an individual development plan, a way for them to identify their kind of personal learning goals, or paired with coaching. All right, so next question, this one comes from a client. How does email training really work? So I have created email training in the past, and it's always a little bit of a question mark if you aren't familiar with what it is. So let me give you a high-level summary of what email training is. So I think of email training more as just-in-time training. What I like to do is to create the objectives for the emails that are going to get created, and then identify the topics that are associated with those objectives, and then identify the resources that are going to be helpful for that just-in-time reminder, that just-in-time tool, that just-in-time training that will allow your staff to do whatever those objectives are more effectively and apply them on the job. So for example, an email might include a video of someone else in the organization talking about something that they did and how it worked and what they learned. An email might include a link to a checklist that has been created and will help them do their job better. It might be a link to a blog post that is just out there in the world and you feel like it's a really good example or a really good tutorial. And so you're able to include that in the email training. So those emails are created and they're sequenced over a period of time so that your staff are getting those, like I said, more of a just-in-time. And so they're getting those, the just-in-time resource over the course of whatever period. So it could be over the course of a few months. It could be over the course of a year. It really depends. I've seen organizations do this well with onboarding. So maybe there's a 90-day onboarding and the emails are scheduled to go out within that 90 days. You could do this as a year-long training so that you're continually reinforcing something that they've already learned or something that they're supposed to be doing in their role. Email training is great. Love it. Love creating it. And I love the way it works. All right. Now, this is the last question for today. And this one also comes from George on LinkedIn. So what strategies can be employed to ensure that training is not only informative, but also engaging and interactive? So I typically break it down into three areas. The first is to make it relevant. The next is to make it meaningful. And the last is to make it fun. Here's what I mean by that. Make it relevant. This means it's aligned with your organizational strategy. So what is it that your organization is trying to achieve? And then what do people need to be able to do to help you achieve that goal? It's also aligned to the learner's job. So it's relevant to what they're doing now or what you need them to do in the future. And then related to that, it's actionable. So you're focused on the action or the behavior that you need staff to take, your learners to take. And then the entire experience is created around that behavior or that action rather than on knowledge itself, because knowledge doesn't equal behavior change. So when I say make it relevant, those are the things that I'm talking about. Make it meaningful is the second area or category that I like to think about. That means that it's not just strategic, but it's compassionately human-centered. So really tapping into your learner's experience. What is their day-to-day experience like? What goes well for them? What's challenging for them? What barriers do they face? What skills and experiences are they bringing to the training? They're adult learners. And so they have skills, they have experiences that they are bringing with them. How can you leverage those and build on those And then another piece of this is, how can you use the learning experience to meet deeper human needs, like connection, like trust, like psychological safety? There's often ways to do that within, especially a synchronous experience. And that's also part of making it meaningful. And then the third category was make it fun. And everybody has a different definition of fun, so I don't use that word lightly. But what I mean by this is, do the unexpected. People remember things that are unexpected. And so this could look like, if you're virtual, turn cameras on, turn cameras off activities. This could be improv. This could be play-based training. And I have two great episodes that I can link to in the show notes, one on improv, using improv and training, and one on play. Both great ways to do unexpected things. And this can be done in person. This can be done virtually. This can be done self-paced. There's always an opportunity to do something unexpected. It makes it so that people remember. So what strategies can you employ to make it not just informative, but also engaging and interactive, make it relevant, make it meaningful, and make it fun? All right, that's it for today. We had some great questions for our Ask Me Anything episode. Remember to take a moment and leave me a review to enter the giveaway if you want. And then tune in next week for episode 50, and we'll celebrate even more. It's the behind the scenes Skillmasters Market episode, and I can't wait. I'll see you next week on Learning for Good.
Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice, share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.